Now I'll ask you, if you will, to get your Bibles out and open them to Numbers 13. Numbers 13. There are three things that I think none of us would deny in our lives. One is that we live in a negative, hostile world. And that if you live in this world and listen to the world long enough, you could become spiritually bankrupt. I've flown to the West Coast several times, and on occasion you'll fly in there and you'll catch what they call an inversion. And the pollution, rather than being going out of that area and on in the other parts of the atmosphere, when an inversion takes place over on the West Coast, the pollution just stays right there. And I've flown in there on occasion, and when you come in, you can just see it from miles and miles away. You can see this yellow-brown haze that just hangs over the area. And being from Oklahoma City and breathing the air that we breathe, you get out there at the airport at LAX and begin to walk around, and it just is different breathing there. And when they catch an inversion, it even on occasion bothers the people who live in the Los Angeles area, but for the most part, they don't even notice it. Because they live in it day after day after day after day, and they get used to it. And I think that's the way the world system is a great, great deal of the time. We live in it. It affects us. And we're in it day after day after day after day. And before long, if you aren't careful, spiritually bankrupt. We live in a negative, hostile world. Second thing no one can deny. We are surrounded by mediocrity. You commit yourself to excellence in your life and you see how the people around you treat you. You commit yourself to excellence in your job, in the shop where you work, on the assembly line where you work, in your profession, and you will see how differently people react to you. And here's the sad one. You commit yourself to excellence in your fellowship of Jesus Christ, and you watch how the other Christians who are content to yawn their way through their Christian life, how they respond and react to you. We're surrounded by mediocrity. Because we live in a negative, hostile world, and because most people are content with mediocrity, that brings me to the third point, and that is this. If you take your cues from the world, if you listen to the majority, you'll never live differently in this world. Instead, you yourself will begin to flow toward mediocrity. And most importantly, you lose your courage to be different. Alexander Solzhenitsyn spoke some words that haunt me. Here's what he said. From ancient times, a decline in courage has marked the beginning of the end. Now let me repeat that, because that's too important to miss. From ancient times, a decline in courage marks the beginning of the end. Folks, I want us to be courageous. I want our young people to be courageous. I want them to take a stand for Jesus Christ in their junior highs and in their high schools when everybody else is sitting down. I want to see them walk that direction in life when everybody else is going in that direction. And it takes courage to do that. I want to see our singles be a courageous people. I want to see them take a stand for purity in this world when nobody else is doing that. I want to see them take the courage to live Jesus in this world when everybody else on the face of planet Earth is mocking that. It takes courage to do that. I want to see our businessmen and women live the life of Jesus in our business communities, where their word is their bond. And if they say it, you can go to the bank on it. And when our Christian employers treat their employees different from anyone in the industry, because they care more about the Christ than about profits. And it takes courage to do that. I want to see our elders and our deacons and the leadership of this congregation to be courageous, to do things that nobody else would dream of doing, to step out in areas that nobody else is stepping out in, because we care more about reaching this community for Jesus than we care about being comfortable or what's going to happen if we rock the boat. And it takes courage to do that. If we lose our courage, you can mark it, it's the beginning of the end. I was listening the other day as a brother was telling about going fishing in Alaska. He took his two boys and they went up to Alaska, and one of those planes flew them in there and let them out, and floating on this rubber raft going down the river in Alaska. He said it was absolutely a fisherman's paradise. He said, I have never seen anything like it. He said, every time you threw it out there, you caught a salmon. He said, I have never seen the number of fish going up that stream, swimming upstream, like I saw there. He said, you throw it over your back. Oh, I caught one. That kind of deal. Fisherman's paradise. He said, literally, that the color of the water had an orange tint about it because there were so many salmon swimming up that stream. You say, oh, come on, I've heard those stories. He said, honest to Pete, that was the case. That the color of the river, the water was clear, but there were so many salmon going up that stream that the water had an orange tint to it. Now, folks, I believe that's what we're to do in this world. We're to try to change the color of the river. And if we can swim together, and if we can get enough people to swim with us upstream, we can change the color of the river. But it takes courage to do that. That brings us to Numbers 13 and 14. This is a passage that gets familiar more and more as time goes forward, but one that intrigues me. As you get to Numbers 13, just to remind you of what's happened, the people of Israel have been released from bondage. By the power of God, they've crossed over the Red Sea, and they have made their way northward, and they are camped just south of Canaan, at a place called Kadesh Barnea. And as they are camped on the southern border of Canaan, ready to take it over to be theirs, the land that God had promised them, God comes and gives them instruction. Look at verse 2. God says to Moses, send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, listen, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. Listen, it's a promise. You can count on it. I'm going to give it to them. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes. Listen, every one a leader among them. I missed that so many times before when I read it. I always used to think that Caleb and Joshua, now those were the two that had it together, and the rest of them were a bunch of dummies. That's not so. The 12 men selected by Moses, each one stood head and shoulders above the rest in his tribe. They were all leaders and respected men. They even give their names. Now, these are the kind of things that in Bible class, you know, teachers go crazy over. Say, man, memorize this. You know, it's like memorizing the first three pages of the phone book. I never did memorize this list, but I know where to find it and hear their names. Shamua, Shaphat, Caleb, Egal, Hoshea, who is called Joshua, down in verse 16, Palti, Gadiel, Gadai, Amiel, Sether, Nabi, and Guel. These are the 12 men that are sent in to spy out the land. These are the men that have been entrusted with a mission to go into the land and to check it out. Now notice what God tells them to do. He says in verse 17, go up into the Negev and then up into the hill country and see what the land is like, whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether there are few or many, and see how the land is in which they live. Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? And how is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort to get some of the fruit of the land. Did you notice in the instructions that these men are never, ever asked to make a decision about whether or not they should go in and take the land? You notice that? That wasn't their job. They were just simply to go in and see how many inhabitants were there and what kind of cities they lived in, but they were never asked to make a decision about going in to take the land. That decision God had already made. But when they come back and they begin to make their report, verse 25, they come not only with the report, but also with an interpretation and a decision that they've made. When they returned from spying out the land, verse 45, at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron, to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told them and they said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruits." And you can just hear the people and the mumble as it goes throughout the whole Israelite community. "Ooh, ah, look at those grapes. Man, what a package of fruit they brought." All of a sudden, the oohs and the ahs are silenced when they continue. And they say, "Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong. And the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. We saw the giants in the land. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Termites." I mean, they're all living in there. They're everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's a strong people living in fortified cities, and giants are everywhere. Verse 31, the men who had gone up with them said, "We are not able to go up against this people. They're too strong for us." And they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report about the land that they spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone and spying out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people we saw in it are men of great size. And we saw the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight." Back in football season, the Friday night before OU played Nebraska, my family and I went to a movie over on May Avenue, Quail Plaza movie theater there. One of those adventure deals like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't even remember the name of it. But we went over there and we went to this movie and we saw the movie. And we got up and we started out. And one of the kids turned to me and said, "Danny, how come all these people have got earphones on?" And I look around and there's this huge entourage of men that've got these earphones on. And they're all walking out and their heads are moving, you know, and they're into that deal listening to the music. And I couldn't understand what was going on. And these guys were huge. They were huge. And I walked out in the foyer area and I turned around to see what was going on. I turned around and I'm looking right in this guy's chest. I mean, his chest was eye level. That's no preacher exaggeration. I was looking right in his chest. That guy was a mountain. I don't know how much he weighed, but he was huge. And I looked around and all the guys were just like he was. I started feeling like a grasshopper in a land of giants. I was hoping one of those guys wasn't going to step on me before we got out of the theater. And come to find out, it was the OU football team that was out for the night to watch the movie, to get relaxed before the game, before they played Nebraska the next day. I have never seen such humongous men in my life. That's what these guys saw. That's what they were up against. And in chapter 14, they say, all the congregation, when they heard that, they lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept. And all of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would have died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the swords? Our wives and our children will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let's appoint a leader and go back to Egypt." Verses 1 to 4 have the impact of, "Oh God, why? Why have you done this to us? Why?" If you listen to the majority, fear invades your life. And that marks the beginning of the end. Two men, two out of the 12, said, "Let's swim upstream. Let's swim upstream. Let's change the color of this river." I purposely left off a verse or two as we read through it. Verse 30, one of these men of chapter 13 speaks, Caleb quieted the people before Moses, and he said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it." And down in verse 6, it says of chapter 14, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then He'll bring us into the land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land. They shall be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Sounds like a line out of Psalm 27 that was read a little bit earlier. They said, "Let's go get it." These two men stand up when everybody else is sitting, and they say, "Let's go that way," when everybody else is saying, "Let's go that way." And it took courage to do that. And they give this pep talk, and they say, in essence, "Let's go get them. God is with us. We can't lose in this thing. Let's go." You think, man, all right, let's all go. And the next verse, verse 10, says, "But the congregation wanted to stone them with stones." You see, you commit yourself to excellence in fellowship of God, and you just see how the people around you react. Let me ask you something this morning. What is your Canaan? What is your Canaan this morning? As you're camped in your life next to a Canaan, and some of you face formidable foes in your life, tremendously, tremendously difficult things, then on the surface it looks as if you're a grasshopper in the midst of giants. No way you can win. What is your Canaan this morning? And based on the fact that you're next to Canaan and it looks so difficult for you, let me ask you this. Where is the focus of your life? Why were Joshua and Caleb so different? That's simple. Their focus was different. They simply believed God. God said, "This is your land. You can have it." They just believed it. They focused on God when everybody else focused on the circumstances. They focused on the power of God's promise when everybody else was focusing on the threat of the world. And the end results were twofold. One, if you'll turn in chapter 14 to verses 26 and following, God begins pronouncing the results of what has taken place. Here are the results. Not a one, except Caleb and Joshua will enter the promised land. Because of your unfaithfulness, every one of you is going to die in this wilderness. Only one, the two that wanted to swim upstream and change the color of the river, only those two are going in the promised land. And you know what? God kept that promise, and that is exactly what happened. 40 years later, after the wandering was over, there were two men out of that whole generation that put their foot on the promised land. And that was Joshua and Caleb. You see, God is faithful to the faithful. And He'll be faithful to you. Second result. This one is the one that scares me. Verse 31, "Your children that you said would become a prey, I'll bring them in. And they'll know the land that you've rejected. As for you, your corpses shall fall in this wilderness." Now look carefully at verse 33. "And your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness." Listen to this. This is strong. "And they shall suffer for your unfaithfulness." Every time a grave marker went up in that wilderness, it was an awesome reminder to the younger generation of the unfaithfulness of their parents every time. For 40 years, these people took care of sheep and watched their folks be buried. For 40 years, they watched that. Now, folks, do not think for a minute that our kids are not affected by our unfaithfulness, because they are. Our children hear us as we talk about faith and trusting God and God's protection and God's care in our lives. And all of a sudden, a crisis invades our life and we come apart at the seams. And our children watch that and they are affected by our unfaithfulness. Our kids hear us talk about how important it is to love God and serve God. And they watch us as we come in this auditorium to go through the motions of worship. And they never see us crack a book the rest of the week as we're at home. They never see us open up the Word to meditate on it and study it and share it with them. Listen, they are affected by our unfaithfulness. Our kids watch us as we spend hundreds, yeah, even thousands of dollars on ourselves, on our own interests. And when the plate comes by and we pitch in a crumpled up old George Washington, our kids are affected by our unfaithfulness. How about it? Do you want to change the color of the river? It takes courage. But it can be done. And if you will take the courageous stand to walk with God, people, we can change the color of this river. Thomas Edison, great inventor in days gone by. The place he'd worked for so many years and had all that work invested, caught on fire one night. He called his son. He said, "Go get your mother. Go get your mother. She has never seen a fire like this." Stood there the rest of the night and watched that thing burn completely down. In the morning when there were just some embers, just kind of smoldering around, Edison pulls off his coat and rolls it up and lays down on a table that they pulled out of the fire and went fast asleep. And most of us would have had our fingernails chewed down to the first knuckle. And it bothers me when sometimes the people of the world show greater faith than the children of light. Do you want to change the color of the river? I do. Let's be courageous in our stand. Let's do what Joshua and Caleb did. Let's grab hold of God and cling to God to the point we don't care what the rest of the people are saying, because we've become so secure in God and in His promises. Let's pray together. Father, many of us this morning are encamped next to Canaan, and we face difficult circumstances. And the grief that's there, and the problems that are there, and the pain that we face, and the giants look so overwhelming. Oh God, help us to be courageous and to trust You. For You have promised that in the world we will have tribulations, but to be of good cheer. For You've overcome the world. Oh God, help us to believe that. And help us to cling to You in such a way that we don't care what the rest of the world says. We're going upstream. And we're going to take some people with us. And we're going to change the color of the river. And Father, help that to begin with me. And it's in the name of Jesus we ask it. In an audience this size, there are a lot of people who've been listening to the world. And you've been drifting toward mediocrity. And you know that if you take that close examination of heart, you know that's the truth. And you've been listening as the world has been saying this and saying that, and they have polluted you, and they have been relentless in trying to move you to a secular perspective in life. And they've done that. And this morning you feel polluted and you feel estranged and you feel away from God. Listen, today you can come to Him and stand up and be courageous and help change the color of the river. Today you can do that. There's no need for you to leave here today having any doubt, wondering at all. If you'll just take a courageous stand like these two men and stand up and say, "I am going to walk with God. I don't care what everybody else says. I'm going to walk with God. Just for me and my house, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to start today." If you want to come and make that known in a public way and commit your life to Jesus Christ, would you do that now while we stand and sing? Would you come?
Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good? Would you walk with Him within the narrow road? Would you have Him bear your burden, carry all your load? Let Him have His way with thee. His power can make you what you